20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks for joining me today. In just a moment, I'm going to be joined by the wonderful Justice Mosqueda. We had a fantastic conversation about just about everything like we usually do, nerding out on all things Green Bay Packers. So you're going to enjoy it. Stick around for that. We'll get to that momentarily. First of all, shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Mike, as well as Todd Abraham. Thank you guys for signing up. If you haven't checked out those memberships yet, make sure to do so. Also, if you'd be so kind as to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. We appreciate that a ton as well. Before we get to Justice, a couple news and notes. We did get the injury report, and it's an estimated injury report because the Packers didn't actually practice on Wednesday, just to walk through. But the estimated injury report is that Lucas Van Ness and Nate Hobbs would not have practiced. Edgerrin Cooper, Kingsley Enagbare, Matthew Golden, Micah Parsons, Zach Tom, Quay Walker, Dontavian Wicks, and Savion Williams would all have been limited, while Romeo Doubs would have been a full participant. Meanwhile, the Packers did, in fact, place Elgton Jenkins on injured reserve. If that wasn't bad enough, it got worse. Matt LaFleur did confirm, or at least state, that he believes that Elgton Jenkins will not be able to return this season. There was a report from Jeremy Fowler, maybe very late in the season. I would think that it'd have to be a pretty late playoff run at best to get Elgton back, but not great news for Elgton Jenkins. And as Justice and I discuss, it could theoretically be Elgton Jenkins' last snaps as a Green Bay Packer this past week. We'll obviously monitor that the rest of this year, as well as going into this offseason when Green Bay has a $20 million decision on Elgton Jenkins. Meanwhile, with Jenkins being placed on IR, they did have an additional roster spot. Christian Welch was added to the 53 from the practice squad, and they now have a practice squad opening. Meanwhile, Jameis Winston is going to start for the New York Giants. That's interesting. It certainly adds a little extra element to this game. We'll talk about that in just a second as well, but it will in fact be Jameis Winston as the starter this week, not Russell Wilson, and Jackson Dart, it seems like, will be out for this week. Meanwhile, let's get to what's on the horizon presented by Schreiber Horizon. We, of course, have Giants-Packers coming up this week, and the Giants like to introduce a little bit of chaos into this week at kind of the most inopportune time. The Giants were floundering, right? They've lost four in a row, heading towards a complete disaster season. They are without their starting quarterback. Cam Scataboo, their starting running back's out. Malik Nabers, their everything wide receiver is out. Their kicker's banged up. Like, it's a nightmare, right? The last thing for Green Bay that you want is a spark for that team. And the Giants decided they're going to fire Brian Daboll. In comes Mike Kafka. They're going to basically bench Russell Wilson. In comes Jameis Winston. And now you've got a new head coach and a new quarterback on a team that has been a little bit feisty from time to time this season, and now potentially has a little bit of a spark. And maybe more importantly for Green Bay, they have the Giants on a short week. So you already have less time to prepare and less time to think about the Giants. And now, even if you scouted them in advance, right, and we're thinking, all right, Brian Daboll and, Jackson Dart, now you're thinking Mike Kafka, who you don't really have a game plan for at all, and Jameis Winston. They're very different quarterbacks. So any work that Green Bay did ahead of time, it definitely changes things up a little bit. So the Giants are missing a ton of key pieces, as we discussed. This is not overall an advantageous situation for the Giants. Nobody wants to be firing their head coach, down their starting quarterback, running back, wide receiver, kicker, etc. So this is not a great spot to be in. This is still a pretty advantageous position for Green Bay, but it does add a element of chaos to this game. And that's going to make things a little bit more interesting. And right now, if you're a Packers fan, the last thing you want is chaos or interesting. You just want an easy win against the New York Giants. So that's what's on the horizon presented by Schreiber Horizon. Now let's get to Justice Mosqueda. All right, it is time. We're being joined by the one and only, the all-powerful Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on social media at JUMOSQ, acmepackingcompany.com. Justice, always great to be back chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. I'm trying to soft launch a conspiracy theory. Everyone's conspiracy theory brained.
Is this sports related or non-sports related? How much do I need to brace? How much do I need to brace for this?
What are the farmers hiding? Why does it have to be so dark so early? It was like 6:30 last night. I thought it was like 10 o'clock. I was getting ready for bed. This is such a brutal time of the year.
Every single time that I hear like the, hey, they're going to cancel like daylight savings time, or they're going to get rid of it or whatever, I always get super excited. And then I realize they're like going the wrong way. Like they're keeping it at this time. And I'm like, no, I want the other time. Like the other one's better.
I might be at the point. I'm single issue voter. I want it to be light at 5 o'clock. Let me do something at 5 o'clock. It's pitch black at like 4:30 right now.
I am right there with you. It's one of the, we were talking offline. It's one of the stupidest things we do as a society, in my opinion. We have lighting for farmers. If they need it, we can figure something out. We can subsidize the lighting for farmers.
What are they hiding? Farmergate. Oh. Hashtag Farmergate.
Hashtag Farmergate. If you're, please like, subscribe. If you are on board with us, and we'll get you involved in the cause. All right. Speaking of causes we need to get involved in and to try to solve all of the world's problems in one fell swoop, the Packers have some real ones, and we've got to get this figured out. So we'll start with the usual. You watch the game. I watch the game. We probably both wish we didn't. You rewatch the game. I rewatch the game. We probably both wish we didn't again. What were your key takeaways from this one?
It was kind of more of the same. I think the defense played better than last week, but I thought the defense played good against the Panthers too.
Yeah.
Again, came away thinking, and I know this is probably going to get me grilled because I see what it's like on social media right now. I think Jordan Love played better than you guys realized in that game. And then the offense still can't figure out how to operate against too high. I thought it was really damning that, dude, I don't like what is going on with Matt, because after the game, he's like, we ran the ball really effectively. And then today
I have that on like, my list today.
We got to run the ball better. And I'm like, well, which one is it? And then like, I know he's on the sideline. It's not a great vantage point, right? Like you and I have talked about this. Like when we're talking about you in training camp and you're like, look, your eyes got to be kind of in particular places.
Yep.
I've been up in the booth for, you know, coaching and stuff like that. And a whole lot of it is the sideline gets to see the near side, right? But the guy in the box is the guy who's going to have to look at anything that's happening in the box or the far sideline. And I know we got the goofy picture of Matt looking at the iPad and stuff like that, but you know, some of that is probably, that's the only chance that he gets a vantage point at the far sideline from where he's standing. So I'm like, is he not getting the right information in this game? We had some weird stuff. I don't want to get into like the depth chart changes and stuff like that go this early, but like the Bo Melton stuff was all second half. Like he had something like 25 snaps. Like three of them came in the first half. The Packers came out of the half and they started doing the six offensive linemen thing where Kennard ended up playing tight end. So like generally, I think halftime adjustments are overrated. I don't think people realize how quickly those things go for NFL teams, especially when you're like defensive coordinator and your spotter on the offensive side of the ball are in an elevator and it takes some time to get down and get back up from the locker room. But it really did seem like in this game, like there were genuine halftime adjustments on the offensive side, at least, you know, from a personnel perspective and kind of the way they wanted to go about that.
Either that or stuff they wanted to get to in the first half and just couldn't because they were completely unsuccessful doing anything as well. Tough to say, but I don't know how clunky this is going to be, but I wanted to go through that. I haven't looked at this yet, so bear with me. All right, so 5-yard run, 3-yard run, 4-yard run, 2-yard run, 2-yard run, 1-yard run. That was the first drive. Your second drive, you get a 12-yard run. That's the only run play that you get on that drive. Next one is 5-yard, 11, 3, negative 1. Okay, that's it on that drive. 2-yard run, that's it on that drive. 5-yard run, 9-yard run, that's it on that drive. 4-yard run, 3-yard run, negative 4-yard run, 5-yard run. 11-yard run to start a drive, then 2-yard run, 4-yard run, 4-yard run, that's it. And then 3-yard run, 8-yard run, 6-yard touchdown run at the end of that drive, which was Jacobs doing a lot of work on his own. Yep. And then no runs the rest of the game, as you would imagine, because they were in pass only mode, basically. Oh, I take that back. There was a key fourth down run in there that we may need to mention. So it was a negative 4 yard run on that play as well. That to me is not indicative of a successful or solid, you know, day running the football in any way, shape, or form. As Tyler Brook pointed out, they averaged negative 0.16 EPA per rush attempt with a 33% success rate. I'm usually willing to give, especially a coach, a little bit of benefit of the doubt in a press conference right after the game. You know, bullets are flying. There's a lot of stuff going on. You didn't get to rewatch the tape or anything like that. But I said like that's going to like, it feels like there's like an aura of complacency. If that's a successful day running the football and right. Your running backs average less than 3.5 yards per carry, like we're well beyond of like, what is a successful running? If that's a successful running, I don't want to know what an unsuccessful day running the football looks like.
Yeah. And I don't want to overwrite that because like, so like the coach gets like the printout of like the box score. Correct. And all that stuff. You see it all the time when like the Packers have, they're like post game locker room stuff, right? When you watch those videos, Matt usually has that piece of paper in his hand.
He like got it amazing. Right as he was coming into the press conference. He's like, he actually stopped at the PR and said like, "Hey, do you have the drive summary?" And it's like, he took it like right then and there. So, yep.
Right. But like, you can look at it and do the exact same thing that you and I just did where it's okay. Your running back's got 3.5 yards per carry. If you think that's effective, every NFL run game in the NFL this season is effective. The last ranked team in the NFL is averaging 3.5. But then he changes his tune. I don't understand. Another thing too, like you mentioned on like the Josh Jacobs touchdown, a lot of it is just Josh doing it by himself, right? So here's this fun one from NFL Pro. And I've gotten some like feedback on this and people were like, "Well, what is yards before contact?" And people got different sources for all this stuff. The one thing I will say about NFL Pro, they use the shoulder pad chips, and because all of it's programmed, it is consistent, right?
Yep.
It doesn't rely on the charting and multiple people and what their different processes are and stuff like that. But Josh Jacobs has 608 yards this season. Only 99 are before contact. So he's averaging 0.6 yards before contact each carry. There are 15 quarterbacks, including Jordan Love, who have rushed for more yards before contact than Jacobs this year. Amari DiMarcado, who has zero starts in the NFL this season, and only 26 carries, has more yards before contact than Josh Jacobs, right? Dude, it's not effective. So, like, that sent me on a spiral when I heard, like, that was worse than the loss to me when Matt said, like, the run game was effective. I'm just like, dude, we're just going to do this all year then. But then
I did like a double take in the press conference of like, I'm sorry, what did I just hear?
Yeah, man.
Like it's one thing, like even the comment of like, you know, I really liked how we battled. It's like, okay, I guess I can understand a little bit more, but like that's more of like a coach cliche. But to when your running game was clearly as ineffective, especially when you can say it's one thing if like, hey, we're going to stay committed to the run. That's the game we need to play. We know they're stacking the box, but we're going to run the ball anyway. Damn it. Like if it's something when you're getting advantageous looks all game long to run the football, and that's your definition of effective running the football, of all the stuff that like there's frustration with Matt of like play on, whatever, that was the most where I'm just like, I don't know how to respond to this right now.
Yeah. Like that and the kicker thing of, pissed me off
to that season. Too.
But So like one thing about being effective, like you want to move the chains, right? And to your point, like Tyler brought it up, the success rate, right? You're unsuccessful on 2/3 of the runs that you're having this season. It's not even necessarily just a yards per carry versus yards per pass thing. Like it's, you're putting yourself behind the sticks consistently when you're doing this. The Packers had 16 third and fourth downs in this game. They had 16 against the Carolina Panthers in just 7 drives. So they're averaging, you know, you're having to convert you're averaging at least 2 third and fourth downs that you're seeing on every single offensive drive. The Packers are actually first in the NFL in converting third downs, but they're only at 48%. Like that's not a good, like you're basically having to win 2 coin flips at minimum.
Yep.
On offense. And that's not even 2 coin flips at minimum for a scoring drive. That's just what you're seeing on average. In those games, the Packers have averaged 10 points a game. It's not like they're scoring a ton per drive. It's just like it's just like third down simulator this year. And like, are they overconfident in their ability to win those third and fourth downs? Like, I don't know. That's where my worry is, like, where we talked about the yards per carry, where it's like the bar is the floor. Like, they don't even realize why they're getting in these positions. They're just looking, they're getting like, they're looking at this from a very micro view, where they're looking at individual plays and they're like, ah, oh, dang, on that third down, we should have executed in this way and we didn't. And that's why we ended up punting. And they're not looking at the macro of like, why are we in so many damn third and fourth downs all the time?
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah. It's almost just like, hey, can we super sim to third and six and take 80 seconds off the clock and we'll just see how that play goes. We don't need the two plays that lead up to it. It's usually going to be like an incomplete or a run stuff and then a 3 yard run on second and long. And then we're going to get to a third and six or seven. 80 seconds have been taken off the clock and we'll see if we can convert that third and seven and then rinse and repeat for the next drive.
So I watched the game on my phone, actually, because you can watch it on NFL Plus, which I didn't realize you could watch it on NFL Plus, because I'm one live? Of them. You can watch it mobily live on NFL Plus. Did not know that. Shout out to Tex Western for pointing that out to me. But I'm one of the idiots who's still paying for YouTube TV, and even though they don't have the Disney channels right now. Right?
I got it too. We're in the same boat.
So I'm watching it on my phone. When they ran the toss play on second and eight with Emmanuel Wilson in the backfield, and they line up in the gun, they run the toss, it gets stuffed immediately. We've seen that play get stuffed immediately. I don't know how many times this season. I actually got to throw my phone at a pillow. I was like, that's kind of a fun way to watch games. So, you know, if the mouse is going to keep you from watching these games moving forward, you know, you could watch it on NFL Plus if you got, you know, the NFL Pro stuff and you're watching film and all these things. So that's an option for you guys.
I need a good sponsor for a good case if I'm going to recommend everyone watch and throw set. There might be a lot of thrown phones the rest of the season the way things are going right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Invest in a case.
Invest in a very
smart idea.
Before you watch your game on the phone, that's probably a very, very good idea. I had somewhere else I wanted to go with that. Now I don't even know because I'm too frustrated. The kicker thing is another one that's massively frustrating too. I joked the other, like, this is a pretty like easy decision-making matrix. Is Brandon McManus healthy? And do you need Lucas Aversick? No. All right. So cut Lucas Aversick. Is Brandon McManus healthy? And do you trust Lucas Aversick? Again, if it's yes, all right, then do you actually need him still? And then you go like, is he not healthy? And do you trust Aversick? Then yes, then play him, like actually play him. Don't put the guy that's not healthy. Is he not healthy? And you don't trust Aversick? Then get Aversick off the team. Like there's the through line, the thin line to figure out a way where you carry two kickers, one of which is hurt, but you still don't play the healthy one. There's no through line for that. We're in uncharted, unprecedented territory of having a kicker that's hurt, a second kicker on the roster that's healthy, but the one that's hurt and missing field goals is the one that you're going to continue to go with. And the one that's healthy has no use for you whatsoever. While also, as a small side note, you continue to roster that second kicker on the 53 while also not rostering a single player who knows how to return a punt, just as a small aside. So, yeah.
I will make the stipulation in that last part. There's a difference between being on the 53 and the 48, and I don't know if
that's fair.
Like, yeah, the game day roster is very different. Okay, let's talk about the kicker. We've been lied to? Surprise? Like, so
you did warn us.
I mean, I do think, look, so you talk about the decision matrix on, you know, front office coaching staff, right? But from McManus's side, the decision matrix is say I'm healthy no matter what, even if I'm not healthy. Because if this guy does better behind me, I lose my job. But then he'll tell Troy Aikman and Joe Buck, like, this is the first week I'm even semi-healthy in a production meeting. He's like, get the word out. Those misses, I wasn't healthy. Yeah. I mean, we talked about this like a month ago when all this stuff started. And your question to me was, what do you do at the kicker position? And I said, I don't know, but they better be right. Right?
They're not.
Fans are not going to be wanting to hear anything. McManus ran the EPA numbers today, after Matt's comments that they're going to stick with McManus, he has cost. So he brought up like, oh, the missed field goal this week, like terrible down and distance, like, well, I guess not down, but distance situation, right? EPA will account for all that because it's weighting expected points, yes. Right? So it's based off of, you know, hey, where was that field goal even attempted from? So that'll fix everything. So that'll clear some of this data up instead of just looking at pure field goal percentage.
Makes or misses. Right? Yep.
Brandon McManus is at minus 9.8 points this season. That is the third worst mark in the NFL. The only kickers who are even half as bad as him from a costly missed field goal standpoint. Jake Moody, who was released from the San Francisco 49ers early on in this year. He has now resurfaced in Chicago, by the way. John Parker Romo, who was the second of three kickers in Atlanta, I believe, is how it worked out.
I think that was.
McManus, Groupie, who, like, he might be the tank commander for the New Orleans Saints right now. Shout out to him. I don't think that they're going to move off of him. Why win games? Like, if you're New Orleans. And then in last place, Joshua Cardi, who we've talked about a couple times. He's really good kickoff specialist, has been bad at field goals. He was just replaced this past week by the heavy kicker. What's his name?
The thicker kicker.
Harrison Meavis.
Harrison Meavis, yeah.
Whose brother, by the way, plays for the Green Bay Blizzard, I believe is how that works out. I don't know why I know that.
Is he a kicker or is he a non-kicker?
He's a kicker. Okay. He's a kicker. So we got a local Meavis in Green Bay if we need a break glass in case of emergency. But he was replaced by Meavis. Cardi is still on the roster and Meavis is still on the practice squad. Like, you didn't need to do the bring Haversick up for a full month. What's his name from the Giants? Gano. So he just got put on injured reserve today. He's been on the roster. Last week he didn't kick. It was Younghoe Koo, and Younghoe Koo is still on the Giants practice. You didn't have to. No one else keeps two kickers on the 53. We're the only team that's done this, and we've done it for like a month plus at this point. Meanwhile, the coaching staff has been emphatically telling us the kicker is not hurt anymore. The kicker is just missing. Like they've said in the press conference, kickers miss kicks as their explanation for why McManus has missed. And then right before we just get kicked in the groin as hard as possible with that shank that goes far to the left, Joe Buck tells us like, hey, by the way, he's only semi-healthy and he's only been semi-healthy since basically this moment. Brutal. One of our guys, Archon, was in the stadium for this game. He was watching McManus kick. He was like, yeah, McManus is short from I think it was 54, and then he like had like three kicks that missed to the left, and he attempted two kicks and he was short, you know, it was a long one, and then he missed in the exact direction that he missed in pregame. Congratulations, everyone.
Clarify as well, not just like short, like one of the worst kicks we've ever seen in the history of the NFL.
The shank to the left, the second kick.
Oh,
horrendous.
Gotcha.
Horrendous. Like, everyone thought it was blocked, right? Everyone thought it was blocked until they showed the replay. And it was like, nope. He whiffed it bad.
Yeah. So that's fun. I don't even know that I have anything else to comment on the kicker situation, other than Matt did clarify that Brandon McManus is the kicker for this week again. And as of recording this on Wednesday night, Lucas Haversick remains on the 53-man roster. So guess we're there. I will say, like, even Haversick himself said going into like kicking in that last game, he's like, yeah, I sucked in practice all week or whatever. I think there's probably a world in which Haversick is just not a good kicker. There's a reason he has been mostly unemployed through his kicking career. I don't think that Haversick is probably the solution that, like, I'd be surprised if they like switched to Haversick and he's just like, yeah, he's just making all his kicks the rest of the year. I think there's probably going to be some struggles there too. I more have the issue with like, well, clearly McManus isn't healthy. So like, just go with the healthy dude. And if even in the scenario where the unhealthy dude you're going to kick anyway, then why is the other guy even remotely on the roster? Like, if even in like the one scenario you would use him, I don't understand that piece. We'll be right back. Hey friends, today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never ever gets old. So keep the season rolling on Prize Picks by getting $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. Now it's time to start getting ready for week 11. Yes, week 11, where does the time go? As Green Bay travels to New York and a chance for Green Bay to show they can actually beat a bad team. This needs to be a big win for Green Bay, and I'm going with Jordan Love to have a starring performance to help get that big road win. Elsewhere in week 11, I'm going with big games from Ja'Marr Chase, Patrick Mahomes, and George Pickens. And here's the best part. Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less on at least two player stats. If you get your picks right, you could cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the bigger payouts, go to the Power Play. No matter how you play, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. I'm not sure about you guys, but it's a season for hosting a lot of holiday dinners, get-togethers, and big events, and all of that planning, cooking, and shopping can take a huge extra toll on my stress levels when there's already so much going on. That's why I leave the stress behind and rely on Omaha Steaks to help me prepare amazing meals for all of my family and friends this holiday season. And not to spoil some gifts for family members who may be listening, but I've definitely been picking up some Omaha Steaks as gifts, which makes holiday shopping super simple as well. The best part is that you can benefit with their Sizzle All The Way sale, which you can get 50% off. Yes, 50% off site-wide at omahasteaks.com. Plus, listeners get an extra $35 off with promo code PACKADAY at checkout. I'm actually hosting a birthday get-together this week, and the freezer is stocked with amazing steaks and burgers from Omaha, which is making things super simple to prepare and plan for. And if you haven't tried the food yet, it's beyond incredible. I can't recommend it enough. I especially want to shout out their grass-fed, grain-finished beef that has more marbling for exceptional flavor. Now, Omaha Steaks is a family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. So don't miss out on this deal and save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com with code PACKADAY.
I don't understand, because again, these guys, like, Koo is on the practice squad this very second for the Giants. Someone could poach him. Right.
Yeah.
Mevis is on the practice squad this very second for the Rams. Someone could poach him. Like,
yep.
I don't know what they're really worried about. Did you catch who's off the injury report today, though?
So I'll be totally transparent about the only thing I look at the injury report usually is who didn't practice. Like, that's my go-to right away with my eyes of like who didn't practice. I just assume everyone else is hurt anyway. And if they're practicing on the, like, and today was, of course, like just a simulated one. They didn't actually practice. It was walkthrough only. But like, if they're already practicing on the first day, I'm like, all right, I don't usually have to worry about it all that much. But who is off the injury report?
Brandon McManus.
Oh my God. I guess I should have guessed based on the setup for that.
There's a couple guys, like a couple of them are. So like a couple that don't matter. Haddon, Heath, Willis. But Christian Watson isn't on the injury report anymore with the knee. I think he's a full go now, like based off of how much he played last week. Aaron Banks, he's not on the injury report anymore with the neck. And then Kobe Wooden doesn't have the shoulder anymore. So not all injury news is negative.
Bad news. They had a shorter injury report than the other team this week. Did you see that?
Dude, the Giants are banged up. We got four linebackers that are out for the Giants. Their star running back is on IR. Their star wide receiver is on IR. And their quarterback has a concussion. And they're already, like, you know, making it pretty clear. Like, no. It's not going to be Russell Wilson. It's going to be Jameis this week.
The other thing we learned is that Elgton Jenkins is done likely for the year. Put on IR today, or as we're recording this on Wednesday. That's an interesting one. A real chance that he's played his last snap ever as a Green Bay Packer. Be interested in your thoughts on that too, but yeah, clearly, I don't even know how to like put this one because he's not been great. I was listening to Mike Wall, you know, earlier. He talked about, he thought in very limited snaps that, you know, Sean Ryan actually looked better at center than what Elgton had. So I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
Sean had one where he missed passing off a stunt, but, and that obviously, like, that killed the pass play, right?
Yeah.
And there was kind of a lot of that when a lot of Jordan's incompletions were that weird, like pressure coming quick or just flat out drops, right? By the receivers who didn't have a good performance in this game. But yeah, so like it, cause the way it came out, right? It was during the game, it's an ankle. After the game, Domofsky breaks the news that it's fractured lower leg, right? But that there's hope that there's not ligament damage and that it might actually be better to be a fractured leg yep. than some sort of ankle issue. They put him on IR, and then Jeremy Fowler says there is some ligament damage in the area. He's going to have surgery to fix it. And then, you know, Matt obviously was like, yeah, it's not looking good. So there is still like, I guess, a sliver of optimism that he comes back.
I would think that would be like down. Super Bowl optimism is probably where I would place that. Yeah.
Doubt. I mean, guys, he's going to put weight on his leg. I don't know if you guys know that. Is it, the leg is a pretty important part of the body for an offensive lineman. I thought it was crazy that if he tore up his ligaments on his ankle and he fractured his leg, he walked off.
Tough dude.
Better man than me. Bring the cart and I'm giving the thumbs down. Thumbs up on the cart. Straight thumbs down. This stinks.
Full towel over the head. Just giving the world the finger. Like I'm not even. Yeah, I'm a complete mess at that point. And he's just like, no, I got this. I'm walking off.
I think he's gone next year. I think him and Kenny were the two that made the most sense from just a cap perspective. Kenny obviously has already got traded away, and it's. Like, it's just the way that contracts kind of line up, right? Like, you're not going to give a guy a third contract. He did well enough that he played out his entire second contract up until his contract year, basically. And now he has a $20 million cap hit. We're not going to keep that. I don't think we're going to trade it either. I know I've seen people are like, well, we're going to get extra picks for the Matt LaFleur trade and the Elgton Jenkins trade. And I'm like, you guys are living in a different world. That's not happening.
Yeah, and certainly coming off a fracture and a tear as well, that's probably not helping any trade value either. So, yeah, I don't see that. I think Elgton will be released, and if Goody can find a trade, awesome, be my guest. I would love that. I just don't see it.
They're not going to be able to hang on to him either. Like, they don't have the cap space like they had this past offseason where they can kind of do the Jair thing. It's going to be more of the timing of like when Devontae got tagged. Right. Where it was like, we got to make a decision pretty quick on this thing. So I think they're going to get rid of Elgton pretty quickly.
What, if anything, would you do with the offensive line moving forward other than a lot of technique and fundamental work and figuring out how to play offensive line better?
So they kind of painted themselves in a corner. Right. And I think you have to go back to training camp to figure this out. Cause we had the like Travis Glover injury and stuff like that. And they were pretty emphatic that Anthony Belton is going to be a tackle for us at least this season. I'm of the opinion Jordan Morgan should be a tackle. I'm also of the opinion Anthony Belton should be a guard, right? But to make the Belton at tackle only thing work, obviously, well, not even just that, but just to get Morgan on the field, because I don't think you're moving off of Walker or Tom in their situations.
Nope.
You had to play Morgan at guard. Right. So they do the rotation with him and Ryan. I don't know if Anthony Belton's even taken a snap at guard.
Unless he started in practice post training camp, because when we're not, able to see it. No, I don't think he's done one snap there.
So I think this team is probably like, as dumb as this sounds, the best guards on the team might be Belton or Kennard. We haven't seen it from Belton on the interior, right? So who knows what it would look like by the end of the season. I've seen it from Kennard. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a better player at guard than either Morgan or Banks, but I don't think that they're going to bench those high investments. I think the whole proposition really – the past 2 years with Morgan is we just want him battle tested. So when he takes over at left tackle in 26, he's at least seen NFL action. But I don't think that they're going to make those moves. I've seen people say that we're going to cut Banks too. I don't think so. Cause this is more like a wider conversation, but I don't think the Packers are really going to try to create that much cap space next year. because I don't think they want to go into unrestricted free agency, because any guy you sign is a comp pick that you're losing, and you're going to get a comp pick.
Yeah, you're released.
So, you know, we're talking about Malik, Ryan, both Walkers, Romeo, potentially Enagbare, right? Like, that's a lot of picks that you would be giving up if you go into free agency. So I think that they're next year is a more like get your house right for 27 type of season than anything, where, okay, we're adding comp picks, we're losing some guys, it's going to be okay. We need to have a conversation about, like, okay, if we can, do we want Gary in 27? If we don't want Gary in 27, we should probably make that decision now. We're going to have guys like LVN, Wyatt, Wicks, Jaden Reed, Carrington Valentine. Do we want to extend those guys? If we don't want to extend those guys, we probably want to go back into free agency in 27. We should probably trade now so we actually get assets for it. Because what you can't do, once you're in this like win now mode, you kind of have to oscillate between, are we losing players or are we gaining players in free agency? And you have to make that decision pretty blatantly. Because if you do it halfway, all you're doing is, you know, basically keeping the talent level stagnant and you're losing comp picks. So you're falling behind everyone else. That's why, like, Philadelphia operates in this like heavy trade world, because they're always like, look, we're just going to keep adding the comp picks. We're just going to keep losing talent. But to backfill it, we're going to go into the trade market instead of adding free agents, because adding free agents just takes away our comp picks. So like the Belton thing or the Banks thing, I don't think we're going to get rid of Banks. I don't think we're going to get rid of Hobbs this offseason. I think the way the math works with the 53, the practice squad, backfilling everything, you know, the little bit of extra money for like the injured reserve, all that stuff, you get to zero and the rookie draft picks, right? You get to zero if you move off of Jenkins and you extend Quay Walker. And that's it. And then you may have to make the decision, okay, which one of these guys, other guys on the team, the Carrington Valentines, the Jaden Reed, Devontae Wyatt, Tucker Kraft, right? Which one of these guys do we want to extend? And then you kind of do the pay-as-you-go salary conversion stuff from there to make 27 not as bad. And then you hit 27 hard with free agency if you do have holes. Like, that's kind of, I think, how this whole thing is going to set up.
I think that makes a ton of sense. I think if there is the right play, because they're going to, depends on how many people they end up losing in free agency that will qualify for comp picks, because you can only get four. So they could theoretically cancel, if there's like five people they lose that would qualify for comp picks, they could theoretically cancel one out. You don't want to usually cancel one of the higher ones out. So you can maybe do like a value free agent signing and maybe cancel out like one of the sevens, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But the other thing too, is if there were a player that were released by another team and they really liked them, then I could see them maybe doing the thing where they borrow money from the future, sign into a really small deal in that first year, and then kind of pay as you go later.
Well, you'll have picks in 27.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So like that's part of it too. It's just in 26, you don't have the picks in 26. So you can do whatever you want with the 27 picks, because they're coming down the road. Like, everyone sees it. I think there's also a rule about like, if a guy's of a certain age, he doesn't qualify in like the comp pick thing. I remember that was the deal with Jeff Saturday when we signed Jeff Saturday way back in the day. So yeah, I mean, there's ways to get free agents that don't impact comp picks. But it's obviously, it's probably not going to happen the first day of the new league year when we open up, which is when you see, you know, the big ticket guys come around.
And Goody could also go in that trade market too and utilize some of those 2027 picks.
If the trade market is totally like, I'm not opposed to the trade market. I like, if you're like, look, we really need the $4 million or whatever of cap space that Banks opens up if we release him in the offseason, go for it. I just don't think, like, you're creating another hole. Like, we're not deep on the offensive line. Like, as it stands right now, like, Jacob Monk might have, like, if you're looking at the roster today, Jacob Monk might have to start for this team at center next season. And like, John Williams is backing him up, and I haven't seen John Williams since Cincinnati.
So. The offensive line discussion in the offseason is going to be one of the most fascinating things, especially coming off a season where, at least as of now, unless something changes, it's gone like almost catastrophically bad considering the expectations. Yeah. And then, like you said, Walker free agent, Kennard free agent, Jenkins likely cut, and Sean Ryan free agent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
because I've seen people say too, like, well, what if you can get Ryan in for cheap? And I'm like, what is even cheap? Because John Runyon Jr. 2 years or two offseasons.
3 years, 30. I said the same thing today. Yeah,
he was getting 10 per. Today. He was getting 10 per, and that was 2 years ago. That's before prices jumped up.
Yeah,
he was only a rotational guy 2 years ago.
And so, I think he's better than Runyon, honestly. Like at least in the conversation.
I mean, it's a genuine question. Like, I mean, I guess figure out after the league-wide collusion meeting that we call the NFL Scouting Combine and see what his number is going to be. But I don't think you think Sean Ryan is itching to sign a contract right now? Probably not.
They continue to try to bench him too. Like every single time, even looks like he's playing well. It's like, yeah, he's not in shape, or we're going to rotate him, or like if I'm him, I don't want back in Green Bay. I want some team that's willing to pay me the John Runyon Jr. deal, that's committed to me by paying me $10 million per year, and is going to keep me at right guard or wherever they're going to play him.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not signing a team-friendly deal at this point if I'm Sean Ryan.
No. Like, Sean Ryan, it's all he's seen is dollar signs. He's Scrooge McDuck right now. He's
absolutely
like, I'm getting all this playing time. Let's go.
And listen, bad offensive linemen get some really great contracts in free agency. This is a really crappy free agency class, by the way. A really crappy free agency class. There's going to be some opportunity for players like Rashid Walker, Sean Ryan, Quay Walker, Romeo Doubs to get real money, because it's just a really bad free agency class.
I have been accused of being a doomer, and I would like to fight the allegations, but I'm here to bring you bad news.
All right.
I've done some work on this center class.
In the draft?
Yes, in the draft. So if you don't think teams are going to be itching to sign centers, here's what the alternative looks like. There is one center who is projected to go in the top 80 picks of this draft. His name is Connor Liu of Auburn. He is a junior. He just tore his ACL. 82 overall on the consensus board is Jake Slaughter from Florida. He's a guy that when I've talked to scouts, the way that they've branded him is PFF darling, which is their way of saying the metrics are really good. We don't really like him that much. 88 is Iapani Laulu. He goes by Poncho. He is at Oregon. I think Oregon's offensive line, I haven't studied him specifically, but Oregon's offensive line is not doing as good as expected this year. He is also the third ranked Oregon offensive lineman in this draft class. So if you want to take the third guy off of the board, off of a disappointed offensive line, go. Okay. That's a strategy. 104 is Parker Brailsford from Alabama. He is playing at around 280 pounds.
Just off their board.
That is not what the Packers are looking for right now. Logan Jones is a guy who I've been actually told he's at Iowa. He's a guy who is much more liked in the NFL world than in the scouting media apparatus stuff. Was told some teams might have him the second best center in this class, all this stuff. Just kind of classic Iowa. He's kind of going to be like Ryan, whereas he's not really good laterally, but he's a bigger type of dude. Just classic dude. Will kind of move you off the ball a little bit. And then the last guy in the top 200, apologies. I think we brought this up a couple weeks ago where we were like, why is Green Bay going to Michigan State three times? This doesn't make a lot of sense. Rising center, Matt Golbin. He was ranked 429th on October 18th. He has now jumped into the top 200, and the line is looking like this. So he might be the riser in this class. In terms of guys that I'm confident that teams are going to want, Lou, who ACL tear, Poncho, maybe. Logan Jones, yes, but he's got some athletic limitations, and then you got a riser at Michigan State. And that is what the top five rounds of the draft look like at the center position right now.
What's the going rate for a slightly used Josh Myers at the moment? So what's the
I don't know, man. Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do at center. They should.
Well, they have somebody on the team that they said was good, would be a Hall of Fame center.
Tom? Well, I mean, I don't think that they're going to do it, though.
They shouldn't. They're just the one. Yeah, I don't know.
The only way that they do it, I think, is if they're adamant about Belton
and Morgan.
Tackle.
If Belton and Morgan are the tackles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think you have to move Morgan to tackle next year. Like, he's better at it. We see it in the preseason. Like, his movement skills, the whole point of Morgan was to take a tackle.
Yeah.
We talk about this, like, I'm using the consensus board right now, and, you know, I'm about to trash it, right? But we see this every year where offensive tackles, defensive tackles go way higher than where the media expects them to. And it's because those bodies are very highly sought after and they're rare. The whole point of Morgan was to play him at tackle, because the other teams that were going to take him in that range, the Cardinals, the Commanders, the Ravens, they were drafting him to be a tackle for them. But the Packers were just like, oh, well, we actually kind of lucked out and got like two starting tackles on day three. So I guess we'll play you at guard for a while until we need you. Long-term plan has to be play Morgan at tackle.
The crazy thing about this is if Jordan Morgan's a great left tackle, if Aaron Banks solidifies at left guard, and assuming they keep him, which I'm with you, I think they will. If Zach Tom moved inside to center and became an all-pro caliber center, and Anthony Belton's really good at right tackle, you still don't even have a right guard for next year. And that's if all of those things go right. If all of those things go right, if Tom and Morgan and Banks and who am I missing? Tom, Morgan, Banks, and Belton. All fit perfectly somehow in a perfectly harmonious, and they all look great in their spots. You're still a player short on the offensive line for starting offensive linemen next year based on current free agents and things like that.
Yeah, we're losing four of our top eight, right?
I mean, not that's great.
The situation we're in. The one thing that I'm the most worried about, Andy, is they go into training camp and they do the thing again where they're like, Belton is for some reason the only guy that we're not going to move around. And we think Belton is a tackle. And you end up having Belton playing out of position at tackle and Morgan playing out of position at guard. And then who knows, whatever you figure out at center, Banks potentially not taking the next step, because Banks has been terrible. He's been bad.
Yeah. If you have Belton, so in that case, you're basically going like, unless you're switching Zach Tom to left tackle, which in that case, now you're having another moving piece. But if Belton and Tom are at tackles, Morgan and Banks are at guard, and then again, you still don't have a center. It's like Jacob Monk at center. Whew. Not ideal.
That's why I wrote that piece earlier, because we're going to have, again, we're not touching free agency. We already talked about that, right? We're losing four of our top
eight. We're not getting Linderbaum. You're certain we're not getting Linderbaum?
I don't think we're gonna. I don't think we're gonna touch the
outside of maybe Daniel Jones, I guess, the top free agent in the entire NFL, they're not gonna go get.
So free agency, not a legitimate option. Okay. We have two picks in the top 80 in this class. And we have like 20 free agents who are about to leave in total, if you include the RFAs. Do whatever you want with the RFAs, right? And we are losing four of our top eight on an offensive line that already can't push guys. That's what I'm very worried about, is the team just saying like, no, but we have to run the ball. And it's like, dude, help isn't coming. And it's not coming until like 27. So like, what is your other option? It's hire a new offensive line coach?
What's the only option?
If that's your worldview,
yeah,
the only option is hire an offensive line coach, which I'm fine with that. They probably should have searched outside of the building at offensive line coach, because it's such an important position when Stenovich moved to offensive coordinator. Matt, and like, this is Matt's first head coaching stint. We hired him as a very young head coach. He had 1 year of experience as a play caller and 1 year of experience as a offensive coordinator who was a non-play caller, right? Doesn't have that many connections. Guys from that tree are branching out. So it's not like Matt could have been like, oh, I'll just go hire a guy from the Los Angeles Rams. Like, those guys are already getting plucked out and like getting head coaching jobs, right? So him not knowing that many people or something like that, like I could see that as a legitimate excuse. But the way the Packers offensive staff has kind of worked in Green Bay has just been Matt's lackeys, and then guys get promoted and you move, you do weird things like name your wide receiver coach or hire the wide receiver coach who used to be your assistant offensive line coach, right? That's the situation the Packers are in right now. And maybe some of it is the Packers aren't spending enough on coaching salaries. I know they're doing it on defense now. They finally did it on special teams with Vasanchi, right? And I still don't think the team cares about special teams, even though they paid Rich a bunch of money, because I don't know how many people would have taken the third.
You can't say that when they're rostering two kickers, Justice. They clearly care deeply about special teams. They're the only team that's willing to spend two roster spots on kickers.
Do you? Okay. Gun to his head. Do you think Matt can spell Lucas Haversick correctly?
No.
no chance. Okay. Glad we got that out of the way. But I'm not opposed. Like,
follow-up question. Gun to your head. When he said that he doesn't talk to kickers, serious or unserious?
I think he likes pretending to be a tough guy on the podium. And I kind of believe like he doesn't talk to kickers. He probably just talks to Rich. He's like, hey, let me know how they're doing. Because even what was it? Like he talked about the field goal sequence. And he was like, the word I got was that he was just short. So he wasn't even watching the field goal.
Yeah.
There's nothing else going on. It was the end of game situation. So yeah, I believe that this team doesn't care about special teams. I really do.
That's probably true.
Back to the point, like if they're looking at the landscape of everything and their honest answer is, hey, we're not getting enough out of our talent and we need to improve coaching and we should spend more money on an offensive line coach who wasn't, I think the only time he's been an offensive line coach before, like the top guy, not assistant to the offensive line coach, the actual offensive line coach, was two stints at Illinois, which was his alma mater. And this guy's like
a year at Illinois. Yeah, 40s? Two stints at Illinois. You're right. So 2012 offensive line coach, then went to be the Jacksonville Jaguars assistant offensive line coach, and then spent 3 years back at Illinois as their O-line coach.
So if you're like, hey, we want to hire not a first time NFL offensive line coach and we'll spend the money on it, by all means, go for it. I'm not going to stand in your way. Go do it. Because I don't think, like, I've seen people online say, like, well, Stenovich needs to go back to offensive line, back to the offensive line. Zero chance. He wants to be a play caller, dog. And like offensive line coach and like running back coach are usually the positions where it's like, that's a dead end job. So he's found his way out of the dead end job. There's not very many offensive line coaches who end up becoming offensive coordinators. And he was getting interviews for like the Seattle Seahawks offensive coordinator job last year, where he would have been a play caller. He wants to be a play caller. He wants to continue to advance in his career. So if you tell him to take a step back, like he might go be a offensive play caller for like a college team or something like that. I don't know if he wants to go back to offensive line coach.
Did he get a head coaching interview? Didn't he get a head coaching interview?
Did he? I don't remember. I halfly did. Rich has. Rich got the Colts interview when Steichen got hired.
The Bears requested a head coach interview with Packers offensive coordinator Adam Stenovich. Bears complete head coaching interview with Adam Stenovich. So I
don't remember that at all, but that's interesting.
I don't know how, like, is that like a poaching ideas? Is that like a, we want to interview? I don't know, but yeah.
I think the Bears head coaching search was super wide though.
Yeah.
I remember super that. Wide. They like interviewed like
people or something.
Anyone with a pulse.
Well, so, the last time they did that, it got them the CFL coach. So I could see why they'd want to repeat Tressman, process. Tressman, yeah.
Before, man.
What's that?
I worked with him before, XFL, Tampa.
Tressman?
He gave up play calling because he couldn't figure out how to manage a two quarterback system. He was one of the least impressive people with like a big resume that I met in my time with the XFL. I think if you just like wear glasses, football people think you're smart.
I'm gonna have to start wearing glasses, I think. We'll be right back. Anybody else feeling the financial squeeze right now? Everything just feels a little bit tougher, and I, for one, don't have the time to constantly monitor my finances and see where every little dollar and cent is being allocated. Thankfully, Chime understands that every dollar counts. That's why when you set up direct deposit through Chime, you can get access to fee-free features like free overdraft coverage, getting paid up to 2 days early, and so much more. I highly encourage that you take the time to learn more over at chime.com/packaday. Not only do we use Chime as a family, but I know multiple friends who use Chime and swear by it as well. The early payments, the free overdraft coverage, and access to over 47,000 free ATMs have not only been beneficial, but have come in huge in some really difficult situations. I didn't even mention the ability to get daily balance updates and real-time transaction alerts, which have helped shape our spending habits. So work on your financial goals through Chime today. Open an account in 2 minutes at chime.com/packaday. That's chime.com/packaday. Chime feels like progress.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Timing depends on submission of payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs. Bank ranking and number of ATMs according to U.S. News and World Report 2023. Chime checking account required.
All right, let's talk about the big one. You mentioned some of the, I don't even know, it was like a minute ago. I don't even know what it was in regards to, but some of the play calling stuff, where I know you were very frustrated. You're throwing phones. You got second down runs. You've got final plays of the game getting called out by the opposing offense. You've got kickers issues. How are you feeling about Matt?
He's got to change some stuff up, man. One of the more frustrating things is like, they kind of had an answer this week, which was to throw OTBs, which are they're over the ball routes. So it's kind of like, it's not really like a slant, but you're sprinting to basically 5 yards of depth and then sitting in front of the ball, right? And the big benefit to that is if teams are just dropping deep into zones, like the underneath zones are giving you that space, right? We're talking about the linebackers and stuff like that, which the Eagles were. They were trying to take away the digs and the in cutters and all that stuff. To protect those plays, you have those OTB routes. But the Eagles knew that. So, I mean, you watch the film. How many times do you see Eagles defensive tackles?
Hands up.
Especially
the ones that are getting doubled. Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Yeah. And it's on those routes, which sucks, because that's how you stop those. The only way you can really stop those routes, because the way – both cover two and cover three work is you have those linebackers, those stack linebackers are hook defenders. So that you can't cover directly over the ball. You have to give up that space. So you either have to play man, which the Eagles weren't doing that much of in this game. They did a little bit of it later in the game, or you have to get in the passing lanes. And in this game, over and over again, like a lot of those times where you're like, why did Jordan hold on to the ball there? It's because his read, which is the only read that's open, is the OTB, and he should be able to throw it. And on seven-on-seven drills, right, that thing is getting completed every single time.
Every time.
But you get Jalen Carter, and I think Ojomo had one of the batter passes too, where it's just this, and now try to throw, 5 yards right over the ball when I'm like this on you. So, yeah, them getting their hands up really messed them up. I think – this team's just going to have to be aggressive. And if you can't throw those intermediate routes over the field, and it's going to get, you can't even protect it with the OTB routes, right? Then you're going to have to throw intermediate on the sideline, which is not something that Matt typically does. A lot of Matt's passing concepts, it's like, it's drive, right? It's just a whole lot of like digs, whole lot of like mid, short posts, things like that. It's a lot over the middle. You're going to have to adjust, and you're going to have to start throwing corners. You're going to have to start throwing deep outs. And Love's proven that he's can complete those. Like, what was it? The Steelers game. He had that beautiful one to Romeo Doubs right there on the sideline and stuff.
Yep.
So, if you need to run a 12 yard out or something like that, and that's what they're giving up, I think that's the way that you're going to have to adjust moving forward in the passing game. Obviously, hopefully the offensive line protects you a little bit better on those, but that's kind of what happened in this game to me. I thought they actually had a half-decent plan in the passing game, because you wanted to – okay, they're going to back up. We know we can't get any yak yards. What are we going to do? Okay, we're going to throw digs on them. But now they're bailing. So, okay, what do? We're going to throw the OTB to protect the digs, and they're going to have to start creeping up those inside coverage guys, right? But now you're getting batted passes, And it's like, just another thing. Like, it's like three layers on top of it. And now it's like, okay, well, what is open? It's like, you're going to have to throw intermediate onto the sideline. Like, that's it. Like, that's the only, legitimately, that's the only space left on the field. Because if you throw it short to the sideline, you're getting no yak. If you try to throw it short over the ball's getting tipped, or Jordan's going to choke on the football because passing lanes are covered. If you throw it deep, teams are already covering you deep like crazy. Intermediate, the underneath coverage guys are already bailing. So you got one spot in the left. So Jordan, throw those deep outs, throw those corners.
The meme, of course, this week was Matt LaFleur at the play sheet on the little, you know, sideline looking at everyone's meme. Is he ordering pizzas? Is he playing video games? Is he playing, you know, Fruit Ninja, etc.? Like, the play call sheet just gets... I talked about it going into the game of like, where do you go with this play call sheet? And there's even more answers that teams are, I talked about this too, of like, teams put the blueprint together of how to stop Green Bay. And now teams are like evolving that blueprint and it's even becoming harder. Yes. And so like that play sheet, like, I just don't know.
Again,
I,
they had an answer this week.
Yeah.
They had an answer, but their answer was countered immediately. Yeah.
So you know, we don't like the end arounds and reverses. You can't run the ball inside. You can't toss the ball outside. We don't like the outside bubble screens. You can't throw deep because they're in soft zone cover two. The deep dig routes, they're also bailing on. And a lot of the times on 40% of the plays, you allowed immediate like pressure this week. So you're not being able to buy enough time even to open some of those up anyway. The short stuff is getting batted down at the line of scrimmage. And a lot of times too, because you're playing deep safeties, the corners, if need be, if they want, can play more aggressive on the outside because you're not as, you know, worried about getting beat deep. It just, it is a problem on top of a problem on top of a problem. And it's why when you see Matt come out to start every game, basically hoping and praying that they're going to be able to run the football that game. It's like, it's literally almost like a hope and a prayer, because if not, if that run, if run the football gets scratched off, it's just like, oh God, this is going to be a really long day.
I'm going to pull up the stats because I know I saw them this week, but the New York Giants are terrible at stopping the run.
It's going to be get right.
They are averaging 5.5 yards per carry. They've given up 12 carries. So more than one a game of 20 plus. They've given up 79 first downs on the ground, which is the second most behind only the Cowboys. That's funny. Cowboys, how's that run defense going for you guys? I think we're actually going to be able to run the ball fine against this Giants team. They're all banged up. Jameis is going to throw us some balls, right? Like, we're going to want to establish it. I don't think the game flow is going to get all messed up. The problem is, I think we'll learn nothing. And, like, the worst case scenario, right? Matt gets to run the ball in this game. Josh Jacobs goes for, like, 120 against a bad team that we'll never see again, right? Against again, from a run-stopping standpoint, the least talented team in the NFL. And then he goes into, like, the Minnesota game, and he just confidently tries to run the ball again. Yeah, I mean, it just the false sense of security that you could get out of this Giants game, which, you know, you still want to win the game. I'm still going to watch the game, all that stuff. But I just don't think it's going to matter much in the long term.
35 carries, 164 yards, two touchdowns, long of 25. That was the Cowboys game. I could see against a very bad run defense. I could see something like, oh yeah, the run game's, you know, just fine. No, you just played a bad, like, it's like when Aaron, after facing the Mitch Trubisky Bears in week one, and he said, we got a defense. No, you just played Mitch Trubisky. That's all you did. You just played Mitch Trubisky. All that was.
Pull up the Bengals stats, because isn't that the other game that Josh Jacobs ran the ball well against?
It was, week six. All right, so Jacobs was 18 for 93 and two touchdowns on the ground. In total, they were 33 for 153 and two touchdowns in that game.
Andy, I want you to guess the top three teams in terms of first down rushes given up. It is the Cowboys, the Giants, and the Bengals. So if we're facing these three teams specifically, we'll be able to run the ball. Yeah, Let's be able to run the ball. NFL average team? No.
Oddly, Justice, you have no idea that I just need a little bit of confidence about this week. even if it is fool's gold for a week, I feel like this team might even need a little bit of fool's gold this week, just a little bit of confidence. I feel better. Even if it is fool's gold, I feel better about it. I feel better that maybe Green Bay can just go in and pick up a win. And right now, I need that. I need that for my personal well-being. It's just a win in New York this week. So I will take it at the moment.
I'll take it. There was way too much talk about 2026 this week that I saw.
Agreed.
Which is unfortunately how I've kind of had to cover the team.
I debated this on the radio today. What would the score need to be in this game for Packers fans to be happy after this game?
It's not going to make up for the losses.
No, even that, but just like happy with the victory.
Happy with the game. God, you gotta score points, I think, is the answer. And you shouldn't give up like anything. Like it would have to be like 35.
Like 35 to like 17, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said it needs to be like a 3-score game. To be very clear, I am not predicting or projecting or saying that, yep, the Packers should win this game by 3 scores. Right? I'm just saying in order for Packers fans to be happy after this one, I feel like it's going to take like a 3-score victory.
Yep. For doing the game preview stuff.
Go for it.
We get double funky kickers in this one. Cause again, Gano just went on injured reserve. Younghoe Koo, who's already been released at one point this season, is now the Giants kicker. I think he was 1-for-1 last week, his first appearance with the Giants, but I think he had like a long of like 32 or something against the Chicago Bears. So yeah, man, weird stuff from Koo v. McManus. Let's go. That's what I got. Other than that, I mean, we should smoke him. Like Jameis is going to throw deep. And that's just not what any other team does. Like, Jameis isn't going to do the Flacco, I'm checking it down in rhythm throughout the game. Like, that's not who this guy is. That's not who this guy is. So, Xavier McKinney, now is your time to rack up a couple interceptions before Pro Bowl and all pro voting starts.
Even if Jameis does throw for 3 touchdowns, he's still likely to potentially throw for 3 interceptions along the way on the way to those 3 touchdowns. So Green Bay could use a couple interceptions, by the way, too. That would be nice.
I have a buddy who was on the Tampa staff when Jameis did the 30-30, right? When he had the 30 picks, 30
touchdowns. Needs to be a 30-for-30 on the 30-30, by the way. Yes. How there's not a 30-for-30 on it, it's beyond me.
There were members of the coaching staff who celebrated when Jameis got the 30th interception and we're like, oh my God, he actually did the thing. And apparently Bruce Arians just looked at them and just like absolute disgust. But yeah, that's who Jameis is, man. Like someone's down there. Hope my guy gets it. None of my business though.
It's one of the just unbelievable stat lines of all time.
It'll never happen again.
380 out of 626 attempts, 60% complete, 60.7% completion percentage, threw for 5,100 yards, 33 touchdowns, 30 picks, was sacked 47 times, lost 5 fumbles.
But I bet if you're like Mike Evans, you're like, man, I love that guy. He'll get me yards.
He'll get me the numbers I need. He had 30 interceptions and 12 fumbles on that year. So 42. He played in 16 games. So that is an average of like 42 divided by 16. 2.6 either fumbles or interceptions per game. Can you imagine, Corey, like 2.5 fumbles and or intercept? Now, he didn't lose all those fumbles, to be clear. But even still, the ball was on the ground or in a corner's hands over 2.5 times per game.
People would riot in Green Bay.
Oh, my God. Can you even imagine?
Riot.
It's a remarkable. He, by the way, since that time, 18, 20, 33 touchdowns since 2019, 15, 20, 23 interceptions since then. So it's a very
toned
similar.
Toned it down race. A little bit. Just a little bit.
He's maturing. You got to love that about Jameis and his older age. He's cutting down on the turnover worthy plays. Any other thoughts on Packers Giants?
Honestly, dog, not really. Like we should be able to run the ball against this team. We should be able to put up a bunch of points. They're out there starting. Like if you were like, who are the most important players on the team in terms of scoring points? You'd probably say your number one kicker, your number one quarterback, your number one running back, and your number one receiver. And the Giants are out all of those.
All
guys.
Of them.
So yeah. I don't think we're going to like learn much. Guys, if you want to stat chase, this is probably a good way to do it. Give me all the Josh Jacobs overs in this week. Jameis is going to throw us at least one pick, probably two. I'm hoping Xavier McKinney can come down with it. But outside of that, honestly, no, we should smoke this team.
I would love to see if there's ever been a time that in week 11 of a season, a team was down its head coach, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and kicker going into a week 11 game, all from where they were preferred going. I guess preferred going into the year technically was not Jackson Dart, but clearly would be now. We'll be right back.
We're favored by 5.5 less points in this game than the Panthers game.
That's wild. It's just got to be a road home thing, I guess, more than anything. Still.
Yeah, everyone knows MetLife.
Also, Green Bay was tough. 5-1-1 when they faced the Panthers, and I've lost two in a row and look completely inept on offense over the last two. But yeah.
Yeah, watch the games. We're 500 since Rashid said we were going undefeated, right?
Yeah.
This Karma. Season, man.
It's been a ride. If we are on a roller coaster, there's only one way for it to go from here, right? Like it's got to get better from here, right? Right, Justice?
We don't go below ground, right? Is this a below ground roller coaster? That'd be really scary.
If a loss to the Giants would feel like a below water roller coaster at this point.
Someone gets fired. They fire someone. I don't know if it's the OC or like you fire the O-line coach.
Scapegoat or somewhere.
Someone gets fired. Blood will be spilled. There's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way.
It's going to be a party. Can't wait.
Or McManus. It could be McManus. I'm hoping it's not. I'm hoping.
Very quickly. I know we usually get to what we didn't. The quick depth chart looks at stuff.
Okay.
You don't have to if you don't want to.
No. I just remembered a thing that I wanted to bring up. Emmanuel Wilson. When did he become a third down specialist?
That's a weird thing.
We
added to our lists of best players not playing their best positions. Chris Brooks is your best third down and pass protecting back. Josh Jacobs got blown out of the water on one play, and Wilson's not it either. Put freaking Chris Brooks in your obvious passing down plays. All right, I digress.
Yeah, I don't know why. And like Chris Brooks has caught balls pretty well. Like they're not running wheel routes or anything with these guys. They're running swings. Like he can do that.
There are things that this team does. And again, we don't get to see practice habits. We don't get to see late to team meeting stuff. We don't know how some of this stuff goes during the week. But like the Carrington Valentine is playing great, but we're going to rotate him or bench him entirely. Evan Williams is playing awesome, but we're going to still rotate him on base downs at safety. Chris Brooks seemingly does nothing wrong as the pass pro back, but now is no longer going to be in pass pro situation. I don't get it.
I'll just run through this real quick. Christian Watson. The limiters are off on him. I'm not surprised. Yeah. Again, he dropped off of the injury report and all that stuff. It's going to be him and Dobbs outside for the rest of the season. Thought it was really interesting. Bo Melton, like I mentioned before, really only started playing in the second half, but he got like 22 snaps or something like that in the second half. When Dobbs went out and then Melton had to move back outside, that's when Williams finally came into the game as the slot receiver. So for whatever reason, they like Williams in the slot more than on the outside this year, which is a little bit interesting. Tight end, it was all Musgrave. Kind of what I expected. They had oscillated between them, but last week when Kraft went down, it was all Musgrave from basically outside of the red zone, right? In the red zone, they start using John Fitzpatrick, and two tight end sets, they use Fitzpatrick. But if they're in 11, like they were big time this game, it's basically all Musgrave on normal downs. I don't know what the heck is going to happen at center or guard if another guy goes down with an injury. I think Kennard maybe ends up playing guard, and then Monk is going to end up playing center if that's how that works out. But we'll have to see. Packers on defense had to play so much 4-3. They played at 31 snaps in this game. Insane amount. Their season average is like 30% for their base defense. They played it over 50% of the time in this game. They debuted a 3-4 look, and Halfley waited to use it until the last series of the game, yeah. Last set of downs. They came out in it when the Eagles were trying to run the clock, and they basically forced them into that weird, funky throw up on 4th and 8 spaz out that we had against the Carolina Panthers. We forced Sirianni into one of those. And yep. The way that we did it was we played a 3-4 defense for the first time all year, three plays in a row, when they ran three plays in a row, and we limited them to 4 yards gained on those three plays. Pretty good. Thought that was cool by Halfley. They played prevent defense too, by the way, for the first time. It was at the end of the first half. I learned who our backup slot is, Andy, with Hobbs out. It is Katano Ladapo.
All right.
There's that. Brinson outsnapped Stackhouse again. This was the first game that they had five defensive tackles up. I think it was because of the 3-4 stuff. Because I thought it was going to be the goal line stuff and that they were going to use it on like tush push things or something like that. Didn't do it. They waited until the last drive of the game and used the three four stuff against Philadelphia Ice in the run. Still big Enagbare hours. He had 6 fewer snaps than Rashawn Gary in this game. Kind of nuts.
I haven't got to this point yet. When you say 3-4, was it almost acting like a 5-2 in that situation?
Yes. Yeah. Like we have two off-ball linebackers. It was Parsons and Gary on the outside. And then it was Wooden, Brinson, and Wyatt on the defensive interior. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Which is interesting that they don't even use Stackhouse there.
Yeah.
Like they're really like, we keep Stackhouse on the field in games to run 5 plays a game rotationally. And like, he's not even a situational guy. I don't get it. Trying to look at everything else. Bullard got like 2 drives where he got to play 4-3 safety again. Zane Anderson came in on the prevent defense. That was kind of it. Do you want to touch on the Asante Samuel stuff?
I had that on my list. I don't know if we're going to get to it.
I think Asante Samuel got told no by a lot of teams. Because the Packers were interested, but I think his kind of like demands and it seemed – so he got turned down like 3 times and then he started doing tryouts, right? So there's a difference between a visit and a tryout. A visit, you're like meeting coaches, doing the medical, that's it. Tryouts, you can do the same thing, but then you're also doing on-field work. After he got turned down a couple times, it was like, okay, I'm going to start doing the on-field work stuff now. And then he ends up signing with the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are going to be his final visit, right?
And only on a practice squad deal.
I think that's probably just for a week. And then he'll go up onto the 53. I don't think anyone's going to try to poach him or anything like that. So I don't think too much of that. I'd be pretty surprised if he wasn't on the 53 like next week or the week following that. But yeah, he obviously wanted some playing time and was like, people definitely won't need to like even watch me like work out or anything. They'll just give me the starting job, right? And that did not appear to be the case after his first couple visits, and he pivoted very quickly. Those visits, you take those, you set up 6 visits. You don't want to go to all 6 visits.
He got to sign
after the first one.
yeah, he got to number 6. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, clearly it didn't. Yeah, I wonder how much the medical played into it as well for some teams, but tough to say. Either way, not a Green Bay Packer. A little bit of a bummer, but obviously Green Bay was not super interested based on, and neither were most teams apparently.
Yeah. Kamal Haddon, by the way, got back on special teams for like the first time in like 2 months this week. So he's alive.
Yay. That'll solve everything. Justice, I cannot thank you enough. Acme Packing Company at JUMOSQ. Anything else you want to plug?
No, man, just read APC. We'll figure out what we're arguing about for the rest of this week, because I don't know how much of it's going to be Giants related, but a whole lot of people have a whole lot of questions about this Packers team, and I'll give you guys my opinions about it on there. After the games, I'm on the Frozen Tundra frequency stuff. I think I only joined for like the second half of it this week because it was late Monday night. They wanted to go early, and I needed to write up all the crap that happened at the end of the game with the McManus Joe Buck stuff,
with the Matt LaFleur saying the run game was effective in the press conference really threw a wrench into my whole operation, really.
I did two double takes in the press conference. The one was when he said that. The second was when some reporter who I did not recognize asked him about who was it that he asked about that he's like, he went in and played incredible. It was Sean Ryan. He's like, he asked like some question of like, you know, Sean Ryan went in at center and really played incredible for you guys. Like, what, you know, tell me about that. And it's like, all right, it's an interesting question, but I did two double takes on that. I don't know if it was Sean Ryan's agent.
Big Sean Ryan. Yeah,
Sean Ryan stand in summer. I didn't recognize. I don't know who it was, but like I saw a couple of the other reporters too. Just go like, what was that? Sean Ryan played incredible when going. Interesting. All right. But yeah, Justice, I cannot thank you enough. Go follow him on APC Acme Packing Company at JUMOSQ on social media. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. Justice will be back next week, of course. Hopefully, we've got good news and good things to talk about. We'll see you guys then. I'll see you guys tomorrow. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.